lot to do in less than an hour. Okay, before we start, it's very important that I want to mention that dedicate today's shiur to the memory of my mother-in-law, Rebbetzin Shendel Feuerstein, whose yahrzeit is today. And it's a very appropriate topic, and it covers the first aliyah in Parshas Vayera. So the opening theme in this first aliyah, the opening theme of the Parsha, is the chesed of Avraham Avinu, and the modeling of the chesed of Avraham Avinu, and so crucial to our religious worldview. And as the Parsha begins, as we'll see, we'll discuss in a little more detail, we find that he is desperate to engage in this chesed, despite the fact that he was sick at the time, despite the fact that he was recovering from his bris milah, convalescing, and I can't think really of a better place to start a topic to dedicate in memory of my mother-in-law, who was unbelievable by this chesed, who was a pillar of kindness as a Rebbetzin in ways that are beyond belief. And unfortunately, she had to do so in the context of Yisurin for many years, in the last few years of her life. Through great pain and suffering, she persevered and dedicated herself to chesed no less than when she was healthy. And this opening theme here of Avraham Avinu being committed to chesed no matter what, despite the fact that he was ill, despite the fact that he was convalescing and recovering from the surgery, is a profoundly appropriate theme to dedicate to his memory, to her memory. So her neshama should have an aliyah, and we should have that very much in mind as we begin this parsha. So there's too much to talk about. You kind of want to give up, but that's again the message, that we're not going to give up, we're going to persevere. But our mahalach of only talking about one aliyah a year, I'm not going to do it, because even just focusing on this one first aliyah, there's way too much to say. I don't know, maybe we'll spill over into Sunday a little bit. We have to see. But we'll be lucky if we get anywhere within this aliyah and forget about the rest of the parsha, you know, forget about the stone and the akedah and everything else that comes in this week's parsha. But just to get to the first aliyah, which maybe would get neglected because of all those other topics, it's a special opportunity. But we're not even going to be able to cover the mixus, what's in this aliyah. But just to give a little bit of context to the whole story before we start going to the psukim themselves. So we know that what's going to happen here is that Avraham is going to be visited by the angels. And it's something which, if you think about it, is very difficult to understand, because Chazal tell us that Avraham Avinu wanted an opportunity to do chesed. That, as we just alluded to, that here the Gemara in Masechet Bava Metzia fills in the blanks, fills in the spaces here in the story, that despite the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu tried to give him a break, the Gemara says that he made it very hot that day so people would not be on the road, so people wouldn't be traveling, and he should get a break, he should get a rest. And yet when he comes to visit Avraham, he sees that Avraham's tshuka is still, he wants to do chesed, doesn't want the break. And it's very striking why that is, but he wants to still continue to be able to provide for people. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, okay, fine, you get visitors. So what's difficult about that story? If you think about it, a mashal, ma davar doma, let's say somebody tells you that you're his assistant, and this person is a very wealthy man, and he says, listen, I want to help somebody out today, I want to give some tzedakah to somebody who really needs it, go find me a very needy person. So you bring him somebody to receive his chesed, to receive his tzedakah, and he's very happy. He gives the person a big donation, and this person walks away. And then he discovers that the person who you brought wasn't really needy at all. He was an actor. He was somebody who was paid to pretend like he was needy and come and take this tzedakah. So how would you feel about that? And how would the rich man feel about that? Presumably he'd be extremely upset that he was duped, that it was all a hoax. He was looking for somebody genuinely in need. And here you find that Avraham Avinu says, I want to do chesed. I have time to give. I have money to give. I have resources. I want to help somebody. So HaKadosh Baruch says, okay, here's three people in need. And what's the problem? They're not people. Right? They're not people. They don't have any actual human needs. So why is that any better than the actor who's paid to pretend like he's somebody in need? So this is real resources, time and resources that are taken from Avraham Avinu in the service of non-people who don't really need the service, who are no better than an actor dressing up and pretending to be needy. So what comes out from here is at least probably two things. So one is, many, many Svarim hit on this point, particularly Svarim that came out of Tells, there's a lot of overlap, but they have this mahalach here, that when we talk about chesed, So chesed has two major sources for it. Now, on the one hand, we have a directive of Yahavta L'Reicha Kamocha, and we have a mandate to love others, and that, as the Rambam puts it in Hilchos Avil, that tells us we have to give, we have to provide service, we have to give acts of chesed. And then we have the mandate of the halachta bedrachav. We have the mandate, it's known in Latin as imitatio Dei. We have to imitate God. And we understand, the Gemara explains in a few places, that's also about chesed, that's also about trying to act in a kind way, like a Kadosh Baruch Hu does, that he takes care of people. We find several places in the Torah. We find that here as well. We'll talk about that in a second. A couple times we find that here. But the Gemara just highlights that the Torah begins and ends with chesed. It ends with the kvura of Moshe Rabbeinu happening through God. And in the beginning, God takes care of Adam and Chava. So if chesed in the beginning and the end. So we should imitate that. We should be people of chesed. So the Rambam brings that also in Sefer HaMitzvah. It's a mitzvah of halachta b'drachav, which essentially means chesed. So why do we need two mitzvahs that do the same thing? We have Tarecha Kamocha and halachta b'drachav. They're both telling us to engage in chesed. So many explain that they do the same thing. Essentially, there are two trains running in parallel. They're going to the same place, but they have different missions. They have different purposes. So V'yahavta L'Reicha Kamocha is about service, is about helping people, and it is calibrated specifically to what people need. While V'yahalachta B'drachav is the idea that there's a side effect, there's an ultimate reality that happens when you're engaged in chesed, that it forms a personality of kindness, that it makes you into somebody who is more godlike, and that's why the Rambam famously comments in Pirkei Avos that if you have a limited amount of money to give out for tzedakah, better you should give the same amount in smaller gifts multiple times than to give one large gift, because he says each time you engage in tzedakah, even though the end results can be exact same amount given out, but you have to write out more checks, you have to reach into your pocket more times, each time contributes to the formulation of a personality. And therefore it's productive. So what it seems like is that Avram is looking for that. Avram is saying that, yes, I want to help people, but I also have discovered HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the world, and I have discovered that if I want to be like him, I have to engage in chesed, and that's going to contribute to forming a personality. And I want to devote my life to that, and I don't want to take a day off. Essentially, I don't want to miss a workout. I don't want to miss the opportunity to continue practicing and engaging in that kind of chesed. So what Kadosh Baruch Hu sends him, apparently it's essentially sparring partners. They don't really actually need anything, but they're helping to keep up his training. He shouldn't miss a day. He shouldn't lose any opportunity to continue pursuing that goal of halachta b'drachav. So that's essentially what this represents. And it's interesting because, as we'll see, this is one of the most specific, or very much the most specific relating of Avram's chesed, and the fact that it happens to be in the context of non-people who don't actually need it is maybe itself reflective of something, of just how much this is important from the modeling perspective. And the idea of modeling is also another reason why this might be the case, because we'll see, we have time to discuss, that he also involves his son in this, not the Yitzchak, who is not born yet, is being informed about here, but his son Yishmael is behind the scenes in this aliyah, and he's being involved in the hospitality. And apparently that was for the purposes of chinuch. That was for the purposes of training him to engage in chesed. I recall how my father, Zuchan Levrach, used to take me with to the hospital visits. You know, you get the chinuch, you get the shimush and chesed. So that could also be, Avram says, I have my kid at home. I don't want him to miss watching me get involved in taking care of people. So even if they're actors, it's worth it. Even if it's not going to be genuinely needy people, it's still worth the involvement. Okay, so with that perspective, so let's try to look at the psukim. So the first pasuk is about something else, and it flows into this. The first pasuk is about Bikur Cholim. And before we get to Hachnasas Orchim, we first get to Bikur Cholim, and specifically in the V'halachta B'drachav sense, so this is a Kadosh Baruch Hu modeling Bikur Cholim. So that's what Chazal tell us, that what's the parsha called? Vayera, that's that first word mean. So Vayera means that God came Levakir Esachola. God shows up in order to attend to the ill, because here Avram is recovering again from his bris milah. He's an elderly man, and he had a circumcision, so it's a little hard. So he's recovering, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes to do Bikur Cholim. So this is one of the sources for the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim, the idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu models it, and that he appears, Vayera, he shows up, Vayera Elav. In the Chassidish Sfarim, they emphasize there's no name here, right? Vayera to who? Who does he come to? Who came to who? So that this highlights the connection that Avraham Avinu, there's no need for an address. You know where he's going. It came to him. So you don't need a name. You don't need an address. So there reflects already a certain relationship. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu shows up to visit him. And there's a lot to discuss here, the idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is modeling Bikur Cholim. So it's interesting on a few levels, because there's a lot of discussion as to what the purpose of Bikur Cholim is. Some of it makes sense for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be doing it, some of it a little bit less so. So then all the more so, you have to say that the purpose is modeling. And a lot of what we have in Hilchos Bikur Cholim, you have really from the Ramban. The Ramban in his Sefer Torah Sa'adam, where he talks about Avelus, he talks there also about Bikur Cholim. One shouldn't lead to the other, but sometimes does. So in the context of Bikur Cholim, he lays down certain functions and purposes of Bikur Cholim. And a lot of that is what made it into the Torah and the Shulchan Aruch and the like. So a lot of what we have in Yerideya, where you have Hilchos Bikur Cholim, a lot of it comes from the Ramban. So one of the things the Ramban writes is that it's there, you're there just to provide companionship, just to provide presence, is itself a value of Bikur Cholim. And some suggest that maybe he's l'shitaso here, because there's another mahalach in what was going on here with HaKadosh Baruch Hu visiting. So the Ramban writes in his commentary that it was to give him a yashar koach, to give Avraham chizuk for having performed this difficult mitzvah. So what about the fact that the Gemara says it was Bikur Cholim? So some point that the Ramban is l'shitaso, that that is what Bikur Cholim is. It's just to be present on a certain level and just to provide companionship. So this idea that he was there to give him a yashar koach, to give him a chizuk for this mitzvah, is consistent with the idea that it's a part of Bikur Cholim. It's fascinating. There's a sefer called Hadar Zakenim, which has comments from the Rush. The Rush we only know from the Gemara, but from the codes, but the Rush has comments on Chumash also. So his son, we know from both. We know from the Torah and from the Baal HaTorah on the Chumash. But the Rush himself, we don't usually have comments so much on Chumash, but there's a Sefer Hadar Zakenim, which has comments from the Rush and the Baal Yatosus. So here there's a comment, maybe one of the most well-known comments from that Sefer, that the Rush writes, if somebody comes to visit a Chola, and he finds the Chola is asleep, so he's still makayim the mitzvah, because they'll tell him afterwards. When he wakes up, they'll tell him that he was there. So this idea, simply that a person should feel the chizuk of knowing that somebody is with him, so that's a part of what's being modeled here. Of course, it's kedai to visit anyway, even if a person is not going to be awake, if a person unfortunately can't perceive at all, let's say, if a person is in a coma, if a person is it's an infant, unfortunately, could happen. So there is still a value to visiting, because in addition to the fact that it gives chizuk to the family members who are there, but also, as my father also emphasized, it's very impactful on the kind of treatment they get, because the hospital staff notices who gets visited, who doesn't get visited, so there's a real world effect. But this nakuda of the Rush is that to focus on the fact they'll find out later that you came, that you have interest in how they're doing. And that's going to be fulfillment. So there's more in this pasuk about this, but just to go a little bit further in the context of the pasuk itself. So Eilonei Mamre, why was he in Eilonei Mamre? So Rashi writes that this is to give kavod to Mamre, that Avraham asked him advice about the bris milah. So first, he tried to figure out what he was mesupik, whether to do the mitzvah or not. And some explain that he wanted to get a perspective on whether it should be publicized or not. Should he just perform it privately, or should he tell the world about it? And even that, he didn't really need advice. In the Sefer Lev Avram, so he notes that Avram was doing this also as an act of modeling. He was acting advice because he wanted to be an Anav and to teach that. And of course, who do you learn that from? We know from our Parsha Shir a few weeks ago, but he learned that from the Ribono Shalom himself, like all of these Midos. So in Parshas Bereishis, we saw then a few weeks ago, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu models Anivus by saying, Nasa Adam B'Tzalmeinu Kid Musainu. We have that whole tradition that he didn't need advice, but he was showing that we should consult others. So Avraham learned the lesson from him, and he teaches the lesson back to others by asking Mamre for advice, even though he doesn't really need that either. And the Lev Avraham suggests, he says, Anivus is connected to Hashras Hashchida. You bring about, Gemara says, in the contrast, that I can't coexist with people who are Bali Gaiva, Kadosh Baruch Hu says, and the Shechina is present where there is modesty, so now the Shechina shows up. Avraham shows this act of modesty, and the Kadosh Baruch Hu shows up to him. Hu Yoshev Pesach Ohel Kachom Hayom. So he's sitting there in the middle of the day. So the fact that it's middle of the day may also be interesting. This whole Nakuda of showing that God is modeling Bikur Cholim, and some of it works, some of it works a little bit more difficultly. The Chida, in one of his farim, the Chida has a whole host of lessons that are derived from this context, specifically about Bikur Cholim. And there is a very hard to understand halacha the Gemara has in Maseches Nedarim, which doesn't really correspond to what we do nowadays, but there's a principle behind it, maybe two principles behind it, that are very important. So the Gemara says that one shouldn't visit a chola in the very beginning of the day, or in the first quarter of the day, or in the last quarter of the day. It should only come in the middle half. And that's apparently what's happening here. Kechom Hayom is coming in the middle of the day. So why do you have to come only in the middle of the day? So the Vilna Gaon, in his commentary to the Shulchan Aruch, the Vilna Gaon writes that this is because the key purpose of Bikur Cholim is tefillah, is that you want to come and daven on behalf of the Chola. And it's very instructive to see what's happening. It's not just that someone tells you, okay, put this person on the Misha Berich list and just have this person in mind to send out an email and ask about Tehillim for so-and-so. But we see that when we're talking about davening on behalf of the Chola, the assumption is that it's crucial to actually encounter the Chola and to really see, okay, what's going on, and to feel a sense of identity with their situation so that the tefillah will reflect that. So that's what the Gemara is getting at, that the assumption is the Chola has a harder time as the day goes on. So the first quarter of the day, things are better than average. So a person who visits then may get an unrealistically optimistic picture of how things are going. And if it comes in the last quarter of the day, you may get an unrealistically pessimistic view of how things are going. It's going to look worse than it is. So you want to get a genuine sense of how things are going. You come in the middle of the day, that will give you the best perspective on how things are so that you can daven on his behalf. And there's a real emphasis on tefillah that the Torah and the Ramah have. Come the language of the Ramban, it's a really extraordinary emphasis, which is worthy of its own discussion. But the idea that the visit is connected to that really also highlights a little bit what we mean by tefillah. Again, it's not just simply, okay, put this person on the list, but really have an identification with where they're holding. But the Rambam understands differently, that the idea of the middle part of the day is because he's assuming that the staff is taking care of them, whoever's there is taking care of them at the beginning of the day, the end of the day. The middle of the day, there's not so much attention. So you can come and you can provide benefit and you can help out. And that's how many understand a little bit differently, that the Iker of Bikur Cholim is to see how you can help, is to see what difference you can make. And many point out that the word bikur, which we often translate here as visiting the sick, but from a Talmudic perspective and from a biblical perspective, the word bikur really translates more as to investigate. As Aruch HaShulchan emphasizes, this idea says the ikur of Bikur Cholim is to look into the situation and to find out how can you be helpful. So to mention my father yet again, he used to call people before we would come to the hospital and he'd say, you know, what flavor ice cream do you like? He would find out how it could be helpful. And whether it's ice cream or anything else, that's a big element. And these two ideas of tefillah and of being of physical service, which both connect to the din of the middle of the day, depending on how you understand it, is a lot of what's quoted in the later Sfarim as far as how you can understand what Bikur Cholim is about. So here, both of these, you could ask, well, HaKadosh Baruch Hu needs to daven to himself, or HaKadosh Baruch Hu needs to come in order to find out what's going on, he doesn't know already. So again, so then you have to say, it's really about modeling, it's really to display to us what it's about. It's not something that makes sense necessarily for the Ribbono Shel Olam, but it's a part of teaching us. So this idea that it's about the Bikur, since Rav Huttner has a letter, there is a discussion, any post can have a number of tshuvas from Moshe Feinstein and Menachem Yitzchok and others. They all have tshuvas about whether you can be Makayim Bikur Cholim on a telephone, the phone call. So why do they all, so many poskim all have tshuvas about this? If you look carefully at the tshuvas, they're all written to the same person. So somebody must have sent a letter to a number of contemporary Gedolim of his time, sometime probably about 50 years ago, and they all wrote back to him and they printed the tshuvas. So most poskim say, you know, somewhere in the middle, that ideally you should be there in person, but if you can't be there in person for either their reasons or your reasons, so, or both, so phone call is certainly better than nothing. But Rav Huttner has a letter where he says that he has a very, I guess, typically different approach. And this issue is also discussed by Nichum Aveilim. We ask the same question. If you can't make it to the Shiva, so should you call? Is that also a key? So again, most poskim say in the middle that better to be there in person, but if you can't, so then a phone call is better than nothing. So Rav Huttner, in his letter, he splits the difference. He says the complete opposites. So when it comes to Nichum Aveilim, he says it's not Mikuyim at all on the telephone. The whole surah of Nichum Aveilim is you have to be there, present with them, and the phone call is a chesed. It's better than nothing for other reasons, but it's not a key at all of Nichum Aveilim. But when it comes to Bikur Cholim, he says 100% kiyum on the phone. Because the point of Bikur Cholim is to find out what's going on, how you can be helpful. And he assumes, it's a little bit arguable, but he assumes that on the phone you'll be able to effectively find out what's going on. And therefore, therefore it's worthwhile as well. Okay, so fine. So far what's happening? So he's sitting there, HaKadosh Baruch Hu shows up, and something happens in the middle. He looks up and he sees, here are three men, quote unquote, coming towards him. So he runs out to greet them, and he bows down to them. And in order to understand this, we have to read the next pasuk also, which is the topic of the machlokas in the Gemara. It says, "Vayomer Adonai im no masasichein beinecha al nasavor me'al avadecha." So, what does that pasuk mean? So, it's the topic of machlokas, which affects the previous pasuk, because here, so God is visiting him, and Avram gets up and he attends to these people. So the Gemara has, at the end of Masech Shabbos, the Gemara has a fascinating, point from here. The Gemara says, you see that Avraham interrupted this visit with God in order to go receive the angels, which he thought were people. So the Gemara says, Gidola hachnasas orchem yoser mehakbalos pnei shechina. That is even better to be involved in hosting guests than it is to receive the Shechina, which is a fascinating idea. And the reason it's totally on the next pasuk is because those first two words, so you see, Aleph, Dalet, Nun, Yud. So what's that referring to? Is that Kodesh or is that Chol? So that's a machlokus in the Gemara Masechet Shavuos, that according to one reading, that is Chol. He's saying, plural of Adoni, that my masters, you should, don't leave. Stay here and I'll take care of you. And that's one way to read it. But the Gemara has the other way to read it, is that it's referring to Ribono Shel Olam. So it's Kodesh. And that he's in the middle of meeting with God. And these people show up. He says, God, hold on. Just stay there. I'm going to go take care of them. So he interrupts his meeting with God in a more striking way. And the Gemara understands, the Gemara in Shabbos understands from that perspective that better to do Hachnasas Orchem Yosem Mekbalas Peyashchina. So many, before you try to figure out what that means, so many ask, that, okay, so we can learn that from Avram. How did Avram know that? So that's a pretty drastic thing to do. It's a pretty bold thing to do, to say, God, wait, I got to go take care of those people. So how did he know that it's better to stop than to stay with Ribono Shel Olam? So there's a lot discussed about this. No, the Behuda writes that he asked one of the Chassidish rabbis about this question, what was the source for Avram's Chiddush here. And there are different approaches. Some say that he figured out that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wouldn't be sending him these guests if he didn't expect him to take care of them. Rav Shach understood, I think Rav Shach's yahrzeit this week, that Rav Shach said that the invitation is in a serious form of flattery. That here, that if we say that the whole point of Chesed, or the message of Chesed, is you're imitating the Ribono Shel Olam, so Avram understood that if he is going to imitate him, if he's going to take care of people, that's a bigger covet to the Ribono Shel Olam than sitting in his presence. The whole discussion, is there a kiyum mitzvah involved in sitting in his presence? Maybe it's not even a mitzvah. Some of the Nitziv talks about this in his commentaries, a mitzvah of Avos Hashem, what exactly is a mitzvah here. But in any event, so he prioritized the chesed. So Rav Shach says he understood that was what God would rather see. He'd rather see he's learned my lesson rather than he's going to sit here and continue to talk to me. So somehow Avram understood this. It's the Lev Avram in his Sefer. So he notes that Rashi, the first pasuk, says that, quotes a Chazal, that Avram was Yoshev. So Rashi quotes this idea that, yeah, that Avram wanted to get up, and God said, no, stay sitting. Your descendants will have to sit when they're going to be Dayanim. They have to sit, so you should also sit. What was I going to do with anything? So where's the Dayanis here? So the Lev Avram writes that it was about this question, that Avram had to figure out the Shaila here, had to decide, should he interrupt or should he... or should he stay there, or should he take care of the guests? And he figured it out misfarah. He figured it out logically that God would want him to take care of the guests. But that was the deal, lahalacha. So he had to be sitting, and that's why there is this comparison to Dayanim in the future. Okay, so he decided to stop and to take care of them, and that's where Chazal learned this lesson from. And it's a fascinating idea, because you have to figure out, what does that mean? Halacha. So is that just a statement? Does that have any impact? The Rambam actually brings that in the Mishnah Torah. The Rambam quotes this idea of Gedol Hachnasas Orchem. So what's the practical application? Does this come up a lot, that you're in the middle of being Mekabel Pnei Shechina and the guests show up? So there is some discussion about, is there a practical ramification? They quote from the Besht, the Baal Shem Tov, that he said that very often people think that if they have Shabbos at home with just their family, so they'll have a much more spiritually elevated experience. They'll be able to have Divrei Torah and Zmiris, and they won't be talking about anything else, and it'll be a much more spiritual experience. And if they're going to invite guests over, who knows what kind of people are going to be, it's not going to have the same kind of an elevated Shechina type experiences. So today says Gedoy Lach Nesas Archim Yosebek Bolas Nei Shechina, that the message better you should have these guests over who may not be on the same level that you're striving for with your family, but it's still going to be a bigger kiyum than the Kabbalas Nei Shechina you think you're going to have from the more focused experience. And there's also note Halach Lechito has a discussion about whether you should stand up for a Talmud Chacham in the middle of davening. There's a whole back and forth about how to understand this din, this concept. But it also comes up that you talk about somebody's supposed to give a shiur, somebody's supposed to go to a shiur, supposed to go to Tefillah B'Tzibur. Shlomo Zalman discussed this. Maybe the guests show up at his house. Maybe he should miss Tefillah B'Tzibur. Maybe he should miss the shiur. Don't try this at home. But maybe he should give priority to the guests, because maybe that's what we mean when we say Gedola Achnasas Arsim Yoser Mekbalos Pnei Ashtina.
I wonder if you could say that Avram learned it from the Priya itself, from Yetzirah Adam.
Why did he make the world?
Yeah,
yeah,
it wasn't himself. Could have been with Makabel Shechina, but he actually interrupted it in a way.
And then the question: why did he create us? Did he create us to be Makabel his panim, or did he create us for Chesed,
right,
or for both?
Right.
And so that's
so
that's the path. And that's itself.
Yeah.
So imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. So somehow he understands this message. So the mitzvah of Achnas Orchim, should say a few more words about that before looking at the further psukim. We'll see how much time we have. That it's a fascinating type of concept, Achnas Orchim, and it's kind of a stand-in for Chesed as a whole, for a lot of reasons. So why the Gemara talks about this specifically, if you want to say that there's chesed that ranks up with Kabbalah's Pnei Shechina, so first of all, it's kind of a double chesed, because we talk about chesed, so we have categories, chesed and staka, and the Gemara in the end of Masechet Sukkah talks about chesed shemamono, chesed shebegufo. So staka we call chesed shemamono, it's the chesed you do with the resources, and there's chesed shebegufo, which is the more physical chesed that you do to help people with service. So it's generally two categories. Achnas Orchim is really both. Achnas Orchim is a chesed that you do with yourself. You have to pay attention and provide for people with your time. And it's also can be an act of staka. It involves cost money, and it can be that to providing for the needy. So it's an act of staka. It's really a merger of both. And that's a big discussion in general when we talk about Achnas Orchim. So is that really meant to be primarily an act of staka, or is that separate from the concept of staka? So the Rama writes that there are various acts of, there are various kulas that we have for Orchim. So we have certain kulas in Hilchos Shabbos, we have certain kulas in Hilchos Kashrus that are there with Neha Orchim. And the Rama writes that what's an Areach? An Areach is not just your next door neighbor you have for lunch. An Areach is somebody either who's needy and doesn't have anywhere else to eat, or maybe it's somebody who's traveling, so maybe they're wealthy where they live, but right now they're disconnected from their resources, so they're temporarily an ani, and you're having them over, so that's an Areach. But your next door neighbor for lunch maybe is not an Areach. So many others don't accept that, and they write that maybe, or at least there's two types, that the Maral of Prague, his brother, as a sefer, he says that Achnas Orchim is not about staka, it's about social bonding, which has its own crucial value to it, and it's separate from staka. So presumably there's both. There is the Achnas Orchim that is staka-oriented, and there is also the Achnas Orchim that serves another purpose. And what the Rama means is, okay, in terms of availing yourself of kulas, so then, okay, that's only for the Orchim in the full sense. But there's a mitzvah for the Achnas Orchim, even if it's not that, even if it is your next-door neighbor. And some of the later Sfarim write that if you've already invited them and you need to rely on the kulas, then it probably applies to everyone. He's saying, well, to rely on these that we're talking about, Orchim, in the more basic sense. So the idea that this is a stand-in for all of Chesed, the Altar of Kelm was quoted the Sefer, Achnas Orchim, that in Hakdam, it quotes from the Altar of Kelm, that this is a Chesed that requires you really to take someone in fully, to fully absorb somebody, which is very different than any other more discreet act of giving a few dollars or coming to a wedding or a kavur or whatever it is. So it's a much more absolute. And it's also striking that Rav Shechter and the Sefer Mepnei Harav, so he has, based on this idea of Gedol Achnas Orchim, that he assumes that it's a reference to everything involving people in general, that there is this imperative of chesed which is docha, even things like Kabbalah's Pnei Shechina. And he discusses there in the name of the Rav that there is this tension that we have sometimes. We have a balance that sometimes we're supposed to believe Bishvili Nivra Olam, and sometimes we're supposed to believe that we're nothing, Kadosh Baruch Hu is everything. So we try to have a balance. So he says that they find that in the Shmon Esrei, for example, finding Shmon Esrei, you can't interrupt Shmon Esrei for anything, or it's Mamish Pikuach Nefesh. So that's that God is everything and humanity is nothing. And then Kriya Shema, we find the Gemara says you interrupt Kriya Shema in order to greet people. That is based on Kavod Abriya, so based on other things the Mishnah Berurah explains, but there is a din of interrupting Kriya Shema. And that's not clear what the Mukkar is for that. So he says the Mukkar is from here. The Mukkar is that Kvalf Neshchina, you interrupt for Hachnosa Zorchem. He says that means that to greet people, so that's where you find the other side of the balance. So a fascinating idea. I'm going to keep you with me. But, regards. So just to see now how the Psukim play out as far as what that's telling us. So the Chafetz Chaim writes in a Sefer Avos Chesed that the Psukim go into more detail here than anything else about Avram's Chesed, and that the message is that there is a lesson in everything, and that we should look carefully at the words, and we should find what exactly are we going to learn from this. What exactly the Torah is telling us now, how to do Hechnosos Orchem, and presumably all the detail is for a reason. And if Chafetz Chaim himself starts off this process, he has a couple of points that one can observe by looking at how Avram took care of his guests that can teach us. And there's a lot more too. So later Sfarim also have many observations from these Psukim about lessons that can be learned about taking care of people properly. So we won't be able to cover them all, but just to call your attention to some of the things that can be discerned from the language here and some that has been pointed out by some of the Sfarim. Rav Pam, Tar Vidas, Rav Pam Zuchan of Bracha pointed out that just the very fact that he noticed them in the first place, Vayisa Eino Vayar, is already significant, because here you have somebody who's sick and elderly and recovering from surgery, and the idea that he even notices that anybody else needs anything is already a lesson. So just looking at that, Vayisa Eino Vayar, that he should see this happening, that's tremendous. So then Vayar says again, Vayar, it's the Krosam. He doesn't just let them come, but he runs to greet them, which is also a part of it, that you convey your enthusiasm and that you display that this is something that's an honor for you. And he shows them great kavod. Part of the whole message here is you're not just begrudgingly saying, okay, I'll let you in, but you're enthusiastically welcoming them and you're showing them honor and you're showing them that you feel privileged to be able to have them. So all of that is a part of the theme here that Avram is displaying as far as his hospitality goes. But Yomer Adonai, Yom Nomasasachim Enech, Al Natsavor Me'al Avadecha. So again, the machlokas is that Kodesh Achol, God should wait or they should wait. So now he says, okay, I will serve you. Yukach Nomad Mayim Rochetsu Ragleichev, Yishonu Tachas Ho'etz. So first he's saying, before he's going to give them any food, he says, we'll wash up a little bit, we'll take some water for you, and you should wash your feet and rest under the tree. So here again, there's a lot to learn. You see that it's not just about giving the meal, but recognizing that there are broader needs, and they've been traveling, they may need to rest a little bit. Maybe as the later star point out, they need to know where the restroom is, they need to be able to clean up a little bit. And that's already a part of the hospitality. And this idea of washing your feet, so Rashi quotes the interpretation that he was afraid that they were Ovdei Avodah Zarah and that they should wash that off. But there's also the theme here that you've been traveling for a while and you probably need to clean up. So here are the facilities. Here's what we'll give you in order to be able to do that. So it's interesting also, what's Pshat Ma'at Mayim? So how come only take a little bit of water? So a little bit of water could mean a couple things. So first of all, if the point is he's saying that you want to clean up a little bit, you've been traveling, so you also have to be careful how you convey that. You don't want to say, wow, you look terrible. So here's a big shower, take a few hours, and then we'll start talking. You don't want to overemphasize how much water you're giving them. You say, yeah, a little bit of water, freshen up, and then you'll be able to eat. You want to kind of play that down. And also, Rav Adi Yosef, as a commentary, somewhere he's quoted as saying that this is evocative of a story that's a recent history compared to this, but maybe this tells us a little bit. It's a famous story about Rabbi Shaul Salanter, that Rabbi Shaul Salanter was visiting the house of a wealthy businessman who was very happy to have such a chashuva tzaddik in his house, And he noticed that when they sat down to eat, before they sat down to eat, when they were washing, that Reb Yisrael was very sparing in how much water he was using. He wasn't washing his hands with a lot of water. So the host said to him, isn't it the case that you're supposed to use a generous amount of water to wash your hands? So why aren't you doing that? Which is a certainly respectful thing to say to your holy guest. But in any event, so he asked him, why are you washing with such little water? So Reb Yisrael responded to him. He says, yeah, if all else were equal, it would be nice to wash with a lot of water. But I see that you have this elderly woman working for you here in the house, and I see that the well is down the hill, so that she has to go down the hill, bring the water up to the hill, so we have water. So if I use a lot of the water, she's going to have to go down more often. She's going to have to go back sooner. So I have Rachmanis on her. She shouldn't have to make so many trips with the water, so I'm going to wash only a little bit. So anachronistically, maybe to read this back into the pasuk. So here he says, it's not Avram bringing the water, it's the water is coming, Yukachna, the water is being brought, which Chazal tells us is Yishmael. This is a part of his involving his son in this process in order to teach him. So therefore, that's he had Rachmanis on. He says, okay, it'd be nice to bring a lot of water, but since someone else is bringing it, so they bring a little bit of water, and they'll be able to wash off, and they'll be able to prepare, and they'll be able to come in and eat. So then the pasuk says, V'yekha paslachem v'sadu v'bchem achar ta'avoru k'yal kein avartem al avduchem v'yomru kein ta'asek asher dibarta. So he says, I'll take a little bit of bread, give you just a little bit, and you'll eat, and then you go. So here's a bunch of interesting things. And so, first of all, V'yekha paslachem, so this is a source for a very well-known statement from Chazal that appears in a few places in Chazal, that the idea of Tzadikim are advised that more ma'at v'asei harbei, that the difference between tzadikim and rishayim, rishayim are big talkers, but they never actually follow through. While the tzadikim, they say only a little bit, but they do much more. So they don't say what they're going to do, they just do it. So the Marsha, the Gemara Bava Metzia, quotes that idea. The Marsha over there says it's not just about everything, it's also specifically said in the context of hospitality. So some explain that this is also a sensitivity to the guests, that you don't want to say, oh, I'm going to go all out for you. I am going to drive myself crazy making sure you have everything you could possibly need, because that's going to make the guests feel very uncomfortable. They're going to feel like they're a big burden. So instead you say, okay, yeah, let me see what I have. I'll give you a little bit. And then in reality, you actually really go to great lengths to provide for them. So then that's the real way to do it. So specifically, it's true in everything, but specifically in hospitality, you have this idea that better not to overpromise, better to speak softly, but carry a big meal. You know, give them something that's really going to be much more than you actually promised. I think Shaul Salanter was the one actually mentioned again who pointed out that, you know, clearly we'll see from the psukim coming on that he did much more than that, right? So obviously this is the understatement of the year. He goes and he brings much, much more to them. So the contrast is part of this idea of more ma'at v'asei harbei, but also a part of the message is that there's an elaborate system here of trying to figure out how to best take care of them. That here you have guests, and Avram doesn't really know what their story is yet. He doesn't know, are they rich people who are traveling? Are they poor people? Are they starving? Are they not starving? So to draw again on the idea of Hachnasas Orchim having different tracks to it and different functions to it, so that also requires different styles. So it also requires that you have an awareness of what people need. So sometimes if you have somebody who's starving and who's needy, and he comes into your house, and you're going to help him out. So the most important thing is put food in front of him as quickly as possible. Give him something to eat to take care of the fact that he's starving. But if you invite over a guest who's a wealthy person, who's not so starving overall, so they're really there to be treated b'chavit, to be treated in style. They don't want the food as quickly as possible. They want to have a luxurious experience. So how do you figure out who you're dealing with, especially if you don't know who they are? So you compromise a little bit. So first, very quickly, you bring out the small parts just to see if that's what they need. And then a little bit more time, so you bring out the more luxurious meal. And some also suggest that maybe it's a way of testing the guests. We also find in Hilchas Nachas Orchim that there's a responsibility on the guests to know how to behave also. and that there's also a need for the host to be careful to make sure at least he has appropriate kind of people in his house. So see, okay, you offer a little bit, see if they graciously accept that, and when that goes well and they're polite about that, so then you'll bring out more. And it's interesting, this idea of guests who are starving. So I'll quote my father one more time, that when we were growing up, so remember Friday night, he would occasionally make reference to an idea that the Chafetz Chaim, it's around Shalom Aleichem time, that the Chafetz Chaim would say, you should start eating first, say Shalom Aleichem later, because Shalom Aleichem is for the angels, and the angels don't get hungry, and the guests and the people in the house are hungry. So I used to hear that a lot growing up, and then later on, when I was researching some of these inyanim, so I did see a number of Svarim quote that from the Chafetz Chaim, that there is such an idea recorded in a number of places, most prominently perhaps in the Dvar Avram. Dvar Avram, which is Chashuv Sefer on Lamdas and Halacha, so he quotes in that Sefer this idea from the Chafetz Chaim, and it's interesting that there are two versions of how it's quoted. So some understand that it's specifically when you had aniyim over. If you had guests who were very hungry, so then you shouldn't delay, you should go right to eating. And he discussed, is there a problem with Baal Ta'acher? That when it comes to staka, so you're not allowed to delay staka, you have to give it at the right time. How you define the right time is the whole discussion. So the question was, would there be a problem with Baal Ta'acher? You invite these guests over Friday night, and they're needy people, so should you have an obligation to go right to the meal, or is it okay to wait a little bit? So Dvar Avraham, Lahalacha, talks about this in a Sefer, and he quotes this idea from the Chafetz Chaim in the context of this question, how does Baal Ta'acher relate to tzedakah? And Mishnah Berurah, L'shitaso, Mishnah Berurah talks about this also, that in general, Mishnah Berurah discusses that in general it says there's no chiyuv to start the meal right away when you come home. You might think, oh, it's a mitzvah of kiddush, you should get to it quickly. But the Mishnah Berurah writes, you can wait, so you don't have to rush to when you come home. But if you have aniyim as guests, then you shouldn't wait. You should go right to the meal, and you should start right away. And he says that also the first night of Sukkot. You know, the first night of Sukkot, so sometimes you have to wait. There's two reasons to wait. When we wait till Seis, like Pesach, is like Zeresh of Pesach. But also, sometimes it's raining, and then the first night we have the question how to handle that. So we have to wait until it stops raining, or wait a little while to see if it stops raining. So Mishnah Berurah writes, but if you have aniyim over, you should get right to the meal, and you should eat right away. Shouldn't delay that. So it could be that he said his Shalom Aleichem thing specifically in that context, but it could also be otherwise. I saw more recently that the Rav Asher Weiss, the Sefer from him on Friday night is Miris and things like that, and Kabbalah Shabbos and those in Yanim. And he quotes there from somebody, from an older person who had been at the table of the Chafetz Chaim on a Friday night, and he was made like that also, that he waited till later because he said that people get hungry, the angels don't get hungry, and therefore we should get to it. So here it's ironic, they're actually dealing with angels who weren't hungry and were being given this food in a rush, so it's a little bit ironic. But Chazal also pick up, and we see from the fact that the angels eat, even though they were angels, so that's also a part of being a good guest, and essentially one in Rome, that when you're visiting someone else, so you should act according to their practices, even if it's not something that's so meaningful to you, but that's still the proper way to behave. So it's also interesting, after it says v'cha paslachem, so v'sadu l'pchem, but you should know you could eat to your heart's content, eat as much as you need, and then leave. So is that a strange thing to say to somebody? You know, you say, okay, I'm very happy to welcome you into my house, but just know as soon as we finish, get out of here. You know, what does that mean, and then leave? It doesn't sound so gracious. So there are a number of comments on this. Some suggest that sometimes a person is a little hesitant to accept an invitation, because even though it would benefit them to be able to have the meal, but they know that once they come, they're going to have to stay, and they're going to have all kinds of social obligations that are come along with this, and they're not going to be able to just come and eat. They're going to have to entertain the host for a while. So Ram was trying to tell them, he said, don't worry, though, you're on your way, and you got to go, so don't think that if you come to my house and you have a meal, you're going to have to get stuck here, and I'm not going to let you go right on your way. Don't worry, as soon as you finish eating, as soon as you have whatever you need, as soon as you do l'pcheb, then you're going to be able to leave. Others suggest that along those lines, you shouldn't think I'm going to get you drunk, you shouldn't think that I'm going to weigh you down in a way that's going to make it impossible for you to leave, you'll be able to go on your way after this, and you shouldn't think that I want you here for my entertainment, and therefore that's going to be the issue. Others suggest in a little bit more roundabout way that maybe you're going to be worried that you're going to have an obligation of reciprocity, you're going to have to invite him next time, you're going to have all kinds of other shibudim that will come along with accepting this invitation. So Avraham is emphasizing, don't worry, I know you're not from the neighborhood. You're not going to be staying here. So after this, I'm never going to see you again. So don't think that there's any expectation that you're going to have to reciprocate to do anything else. This is totally no strings attached. You can come here, you can have your meal, and you'll be on your way. And that'll be the whole story. So fine. So the pasuk continues. V'yimbar Avraham Oela El Sara V'yomer Maharish Shlosh Im Kavach Solas Lushi V'Asi Gos. So she tells her to really prepare some nice bread, some nice pastries. V'yala Boker Ratz Avraham V'yikach Ber Boker Rach V'tov V'yitein El Hanar V'yimbar La Soso Soisi. He is involved himself, and he gets the meal together, and he involves Yishmael and tells him to deliver. So here, a lot of interesting discussions about the Basul B'cholav, Kodem Matan Torah, and some even discussed that angels are made out of fire. So maybe by eating the Basul B'cholav is a bishul going on in it. Interesting that we're not worried about that, but that's an interesting discussion that we will put aside for now. But in any event, he serves them in grand style. And who omed aleim tachas ha'etz, so he stands by them. So here again, the commentaries point out different ideas, what's being conveyed by saying who omed aleim. So some suggest that it's meant to convey proximity, that he's not just a dispassionate ghost, a guest, a host. Not a ghost, but a host of guests. He's not just, or it could be a ghost also. He's not just a dispassionate host who says, okay, here's the food, I'm going to go watch TV. But you recognize that your presence is a part of it, and that you're going to give them your attention, and that's also being conveyed here. But there's also a distance. And that distance is helpful because it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, actually. You're not supposed to overly pay attention to what people are eating, and it makes people very uncomfortable. Oh, you're eating that, you're eating that much, you're eating putting that with that, and that's something which is not al pi derech midos v'derech eretz. And so Avraham is giving them a little bit of space also. He's standing nearby, but he's not hovering over them. That's how some understand. It's also a part of the idea of hosting, and there's an obligation to have that kind of sensitivity. So again, that's being conveyed. So then the psukim continue. So Yomer Weilav Ayesar Ishtachav Yomer Hineva Ohel. So they ask where Sara is, and apparently she's Tzanua, she's in the Ohel. I saw someone send around this week that this pasuk was quoted next to a picture of a Chassidish man whose wife was wearing basically a burqa. You know, that take on the style. So she's in the ohel, she's walking in the tent. But here it's a more normal sense of tznius, so she's in a stationary tent. And the idea is, okay, they ask where Sara is. But Yomer Shuva Shavilech Keis Chayav Hinei Vein L'Sar Yishdecha V'Sar Shemash Pesach Ohovu Acharav. So here they tell him, guess what? You're going to have a son. So you can imagine how surprising that is coming from anyone, but especially some random guest off the street who I don't know who he is. So that's certainly surprising news. But Avraham v'Sara is the Canaan, boim v'yamim chadalios the Sara kanashim. So here, Sara was past childbearing age. They're both elderly, and that's very surprising to them, coming from anyone, let alone these random strangers. So how could that be? So v'titzchok Sara v'kirva. So Sara laughs. She says, how could that be that I'm going to have a child and I'm so elderly? How could that be? So the next pasuk, she says, how could it be I'm going to have a child? My husband is so elderly. That's the crucial point. She says that my husband is old. How could it be that we're going to have a child? So the next pasuk, it comes across differently. Right, the following pasuk, V'yemer Hashem al Avram, Lamazeh sachakas sara lemor, ha'afum nami leid, v'anizokanti. Right, so it gets changed. So here, Sara said, how could I have a child? Avram is old. And now, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu relates that to Avram, he says, yeah, Sara is skeptical about this whole child thing, and she said, old. You know, essentially making it sound like she said that she was old. when really she said that Avram was old. So the Gemara Maseches Yevamos tells us that this is crucial to halacha because the Gemara there has a machlokas. That one opinion says mutar l'shanos b'fnei hashalom, that it's permissible to fudge the truth for the sake of peace. And the next opinion, the Gemara rejects this and says, not true. It's not mutar to be mishanah b'nei hashalom. It's a mitzvah l'shanos b'nei hashalom, that one is obligated, if shalom is at stake, one is obligated to say something even if it's not true. And for each one of those, they have a proof. There's a proof for the first opinion, a proof for the second opinion. And then the Gemara goes on to say, Afakadosh Baruch Hu Atzmo Asa Kein, that even God himself does this. And they quote this pasuk, that we see that in order to maintain Shalom Ben Ish L'Ishto, that here God relates to Avram, the quote, in a different way than it was actually said, in order to keep the peace. So there's a big discussion in the Achronim how to understand this whole notion of Mutar L'Shanos B'fnei HaShalom. So some understand that there's a values clash, that there's an idea of, on the one hand, Midvar Sheker Tirchak, but on the other hand, there is the value of Shalom. And in a clash between the two, so Shalom wins. The pasuk in Zechariah says that the emes v'shalom v'havu, that truth and peace are beloved. So one could understand that to mean they have two pillars of Jewish values. They have truth and peace, and they might be at odds with each other. Then you got to figure out what to do. So that could be the opinion mutar l'shanos. If you say the two values are equal, it means it's legitimate to pick either one. It's legitimate to pick shalom, but it's legitimate also to pick emes. But the other opinion, the second opinion, the Gemara says mitzvah l'shanos. So how do we decide that it's not optional, but it's obligatory? So here also you could say either that it's a values clash, but they're not equal, shalom is greater, or some understand that, no, it's not even a values clash, that the whole Isser of Sheker in its real form is, as the Sefer Yireim understands, the Benal Machavero. So if you hurt somebody through Sheker, so that's the real Isser. We have a general value of Emes beyond that, but as a real din in the Torah, it's about the Benal Machavero of hurting people. So if what you're saying is not hurtful, it's actually constructive, so then it's not the Isser of Midvar Sheker Tirchak. A general value of Emes, for sure, but it's not the Isser of Midvar Sheker Tirchak. So that's why I'd say mitzvah l'shanos, because you don't have any clash. You only have the mitzvah of shalom, and you don't have any reason not to. So that's a big discussion, which one it is. Does it make a nafkamina? So one nafkamina it could have is, what if you have to decide? So do we say there's nothing wrong at all? I can just say something completely false? Or are we somewhat limited? Are we saying that you don't have to be as honest as you would be in business or in other contexts where things are on the line, but you shouldn't lie outright. You should do whatever you can to try to hold on to as much shalom as possible. So from the Gemara, it's not clear, because it's probably relevant that the Gemara doesn't say mutar l'shaker b'fnei hashalom. Gemara says mutar l'shanos, that it's permissible to change things around a little bit, to deviate a little bit, but doesn't necessarily convey that you can outright lie. Maybe it does. That's the question. The Chafetz Chaim writes that if a person is back is up against the wall, so then he can outright lie. But if a person has the ability to do it a little bit more softly, so then he shouldn't lie. Some suggest, you know, there's a machlokas in the Gemara in Ksubis, that Beis Hillel were of the opinion that when you're at a wedding, you should say, Kesem Rakhtim Lefnei Akala, Kalandal V'chasuda, that whatever it is, you should say she's a beautiful bride, regardless of whatever the facts are. And Beis Shammai said, no, we have Mizvar Sheker Tirchak, that what if you're not so impressed? What if you don't think that she's so beautiful? So he says, Kala Kamayshi, so you say something that you can get behind, say something that's true. Don't necessarily say she's beautiful if she isn't. So some of the commentaries ask, so there's a discussion about this, Rav Yitzchak Sternhill in a Sefer, Koch V'Yitzchak has this approach, where he says, according to every opinion of the Gemara, it's Mutar L'Shanos B'nei HaShalom. So what's wrong? So Beis Shammai is firmer than God? We see that even God is being M'Shanos B'nei HaShalom. So no one says you're not allowed to. So why does he say you can't say Kalam Lav V'Chasudah? So he suggests that the machlokas is that Beis Shammai would agree that if you're pushed up against the wall, and if they were living in contemporary times when there were people coming around at the weddings with video cameras coming up to you in the middle of your meal and saying, "Nu, what do you think of the kala?" So then, yeah, kala nava chesuda. But if nobody asks you, so why should you jump in the middle of a circle and start screaming kala nava chesuda when It's not true. So, or you don't think it's actually true. So, therefore, that's the machlokas. We say that this is hutra completely, and you can say no matter what. Or do we say that if you have to, you have to, but better to avoid it. So, it's a discussion also how to understand these psukim. So, if you look at the Mefarshim, look at the Arachaim and others, so they talk about this phrase, Vaniza Kanti. So, is that really different from what she said about Adonai Zakein? Or is that what she meant? He's just saying it a little more delicately. She was saying, we're an elderly couple, and how likely is it we're going to have children? So Kadosh Baruch Hu rephrases it a little bit to de-emphasize the reference to Avram, but it's not really different. Or are we comfortable saying that maybe it could be completely different, and that's also okay, that's also permissible Ipnei Hashem. So in any event, so the end of Leah ends off in a way pressed it's appropriate for us to close. So he says, how could it be that she's so surprised? You think it's impossible? You think Kadosh Baruch Hu is unable to do anything? Is there anything that is beyond him? Is anything too wondrous for him? Even this can happen. Even a couple this elderly can have a child. If we say, Hayad Hashem Tiktsar, is God's hand too short? Clearly it isn't. But our time is too katsar. So we're out of time, so we have to stop here. But as you see, there's a lot in this aliyah. And hopefully we can take this to heart and learn even the mitzvah, so the many lessons. We'll have a very inspiring Shabbos.